When hurt while the ceremony proceeded, reading a Subway advertisement that bore a photo of me with the caption ex-child star and generally useful. I think we were trying to tell you something, don't you? Damned right we were. But was I listening? Oh, no. No, Senoi, me, this cookie. Look, you needn't leap from self-defense to self-contempt. You might pause for a moment at self-knowledge. Self-knowledge isn't always that available or even desirable when you wake up with your skin drenched in sweat and your heart pounding, when you find during certain periods that you're actually afraid to fall asleep at night. You needn't come on so all pure and all helpful. What about the victims of shell shock, of rape, of the concentration camps? What about the torture they endured, dreaming and redreaming the same moment of worst atrocity, night after night, sometimes for the rest of their lives? Is that kind of you and your kind? Is that merciful? Perhaps not kind, no, but strangely merciful. There are things worse than remembering. To forget such an experience can be to remain in its thrall forever. To remember may be the only way of surviving it, exorcising it. Besides, you really can't keep splitting things up the way you do. There is a collaboration between the dreamer and the dream, you know. Dream better dreams, Mark Twain warned. I'm only the medium. Furthermore, who are you to complain? You haven't had it so bad. It hasn't been all nightmares now, has it? I distinctly recall you being a Hawaiian priestess, dancing ecstatically in your own body, lithe and oiled to a glistening patina, dancing with careless confidence around the mouth of a volcano. Laurence Olivier was watching, I think, or Dirk Bogarde, I forget which. But you took no notice, so given over were you to the dance. Yes, oh, and the wonderful journey we took inside our body, remember? When we showed me all the delicate mechanisms, the exquisite poise of the weights and balances, the way the blood rushes through the arteries like garnet rapids. I remember how the lymph looked like a film of milky crystal. I remember the irrepressible, indomitable, slow drum beat echo of my heart reverberating along each bone. Oh, and that wonderfully erotic afternoon when I lay napping in my sleep, and my husband climbed in slyly through the window and became my lover, all amber sunlight and slow liquid bodies afloat like dust motes in a beam of air. I'm just so pleased that you appreciate my repertory and haven't forgotten some of the best ones. You're quite a woman after all. It's no wonder I love you and that I've stuck with you all these years. It hasn't always been easy, you know. It feels like one sends and sends and sends, trying so hard to be inventive, to find a new and startling way of saying something that didn't get through before. May I ask you something? Please do. It would be refreshing. What happens to dreams that don't get out? I think the Elephant Man once asked that.
Oh, good. You just dropped another blue apple.
Well, we always do get one way or another. It just depends on how clearly and how early we're listened to. For example, you and I have been dreaming about freedom for years. I remember you killing for it, dying for it, being tortured for it, shooting off machine guns in guerrilla wars for it, being stood in front of firing squads and under guillotines for it.
So do I. Don't remind me. I still break out in a cold sweat when I think of some of those.
But it took a long time to, well, sort of ground things. It was Simone Weil who said, "The time has come to give up dreaming of liberty and to make up one's mind to conceive it." Of course, she dichotomized her terminology a bit. But don't misunderstand me. I don't regret anything we were able to pull off in the earlier years. First, it was the best we could manage at the time, and second, it was fitting in that it was put to real use. But what I mean is that only in the past decade or so have we been able to cast parts for the mother or the husband or the child at all, don't you see?
We're only just beginning to get to you. To us.
Well, I was damned if I was going to see my own situation as anything approaching exceptional. I knew that trap. I knew that the personal was political.
That doesn't make it any the less personal.
And I certainly wasn't going to settle for any so-called personal solution. Not that there was one to be had.
Indeed. So you needn't have struggled so hard to avoid it. And just because there aren't personal solutions doesn't mean that there can't be personal attempts, changes, affirmations.
Oh, how I know, my dear. I'll never forget how once, I'm sure you remember too, I was playing on a beach with Kenneth and Blake. That's my husband and son.
Footnoting again. And for my sake yet.
Now that's really silly. Of course, sorry. Anyway, there we were, the three of us, and we went down to play on a long, low, silvery sandbar. The day was all sparkle, all soft, warm wind and azure and rose light. Then the reminder that such beauty can mean death to some. I don't even know what kind of fish they were, baby weak fish or young bluefish, maybe. Minnows of some sort. But there they were by the hundreds, trapped between a sandbar and shore by the low tide. And the sudden sweep and whirl of gulls overhead, a cloud of wings against the sun. Then that look. That one look exchanged between Kenneth and me, no words spoken. And suddenly each of us at the same moment sprang up and began to run back and forth, our hands filled with gasping fish, carrying them out to the deep water into life. Then Blake, only just 7 years old, utterly forgetful that this was the fearful ocean, doggedly wading out up to his nipples in choppy waves, squirming panicked minnows writhing in his silver-scaled small fists, flinging them far out even at the risk of losing his balance. And the kindness of that stranger, the man on the beach who accepted my apology for having peremptorily requisitioned his absent child's bucket to fill with water and with the bodies of still-living fish, so that 5 and 8 and even 12 at a time could be carried out and saved. The other people who began to join us in this blessed opportunity to save something right then, right now. The illumination on us all, ordinary beachgoers on a hot summer day at low tide, forming a human zigzag of salvation for some other creatures for once. I remember thinking, I am so grateful. I am grateful for knowing a person like Blake, for having shared that glance with Kevin, for having been one with those good people, for having felt the slippery life swim free from my hands, even for the gathering circle and swoop of the gulls who kept swaying on in as if the news had been borne to them on the wind, to use what we were unable to save, to use and be of use, and to be honest and clean about it, I remember thinking. I want to learn to praise such things in action all my days. That was a dream of freedom. That was a miraculous dream.
Oh, my dearest one, that was what you call real. That was the afternoon of July 15th, 1976, on the beach at Amagansett, Long Island. That dream, as you would say, truly happened.
Did it? Oh, did it? It was so real. So perfect that I couldn't be sure.
Ah, then you might yet stand a chance of awakening from thinking that you're awake after all. What a great mystery it is, this undreaming. You've undreamed your way toward freedom before, you know. You did it all yourself, too. I only watched from a distance filled with pride. You named it the trip without
a ticket, yes. Without the aid of being asleep, without any psychedelic drugs, without alcohol. Just lying in bed one night, not yet dozing. Kenneth writing a poem in the next room. Blake not yet born. And suddenly, I'm swimming, but not in the water. In light. I'm arching and diving free as if I were a minnow, or as if I were a rainbow ribbon of color, dipping and twining with other strands of the spectrum in a sea of prism. Then we're all facets in a single crystal flying on currents of color. Then...
I'm here. Let me help. Then there's a marble book.
Yes, yes, a marble book. It's like a plaque carved from heavy pink-veined quartz, and it rests on a marble pedestal that rises straight up from a marble floor. The room is vast, an immense hall, and completely empty except for myself standing before the pedestal, trying to decipher the hieroglyphics carved in the book. There's a humming all around me, and I look up to see that the walls have become a giant honeycomb, stretching higher and farther than I can see. Everywhere, everywhere there's an infinity of honeycomb cells, and in each tiny cell there's a life form breathing, bending, gesturing, going on about its business. I realize that I'm in the center of one strand of the DNA helix, that each cell, each particle of energy is alive, not with potential, but now. Alive, complete, full, perfect, dying. I begin to weep with relief and happiness. Then I see three shapes emerging from their cells far off in front of me. They slowly move toward me. They are of indeterminate sex, race, and age, but clearly human. Each is wearing a soft robe of sort of dark medieval robe, with long, loose, hanging sleeves that cover any sign of wrist or hand, and with large, soft hoods that cover the head entirely. They walk with a steady, slow, swinging gait and with heads bent forward, so the hoods cover their faces as well. The three figures seem awesome, but not frightening. Yet in my surprise that they appear to want to contact me, I lose my grip on the marble book I had just lifted from its pedestal, and it crashes to the floor below, shattering into 1,000 fragments. Instantly, one of the three speaks in a genderless voice of great sadness and compassion. "Ah," it breathes, "then you must reassemble the book from all of its fragments. You must decipher its meaning." "But I cannot," I cry out. "It's impossible. I shall never be able to piece it together now, and if I could, I have no way of understanding its message." This time the three reply in concert. "Ah," they sigh, "you must, dear child, or you will never get back into your body." And then suddenly Kenneth was shaking me, calling to me that I was sleeping with my eyes wide open, calling to me. "Did you ever get back to your body?" Did I what? "Well, of course, I'm here, aren't I? Don't tell me that I'm dreaming this." "Look at it this way. What are you doing right now? I mean, in addition to sipping tea and juggling blue apples, of course." "I'm typing this conversation as a chapter for my new book." "Your new book. And what's the name of this book?"
"I'm not sure yet, but I think, I think The Anatomy of Freedom, although I really can't say why."
"Why can't you say why?"
"Because I know nothing about freedom when you come right down to it. Because I'm learning as I go along, because I'm still piecing it together."
"Ah.
You mean I'm still piecing this is really, I never got back to my, oh God, I can't take this. This is too much for me. I'll never be able to do it, never. I'll have to give up, call the whole thing off, drop the book. I mean, I've already dropped the book, it seems, and I can't put it back together. I'll have to phone my editor tomorrow morning and tell her that I just see no way to..."
"Hush, you're just tired, that's all. You forget that I know you know more than you know you know. Don't you know that yet?"
"Well, yes, I suppose I do. That is, I suppose you do. But...
"Stop butting, dear heart. You're not a goat. You're a human being. And we know the title of the book now, don't we? That's something, isn't it?"
"But who ever heard of a title without a book?"
"The same people who heard of a grin without a cat. You love cats, don't you?"
"Yes, yes, definitely. That, at least, is for certain. Something solid, something I can hold on to. I love cats."
"Well, what's the problem, then? Has it occurred to you that you might concentrate on the wholeness of each fragment as perfect in itself, and so come to an understanding of the marble book? Then the fragments may well coalesce of themselves. That's the way things happen in my world all the time."
"If only I could believe you. If only I thought myself capable of the task, worthy of it.
Have I ever lied to you?
No, never. You alone in all my life have never lied to me. I've even lied to myself, but you've always told me the truth. That's true.
Then listen to me. Trust me. You'll undream your way toward freedom at just the moment freedom is dreaming its way toward you. I myself will arrange it, I promise you. What's more, I'll give you a watchword, an amulet, a token of your own making. It's one you forgot you made, you silly darling. Try to remember. Relax. Remember.
This is another time and place. There's a small statue. It's been sculpted by a young male sculptor whom I've sculpted into my lover in some other dream. The room is filled with shelves, each shelf crowded with maquettes, small model figures of the giant-sized sculptures he hopes to get commissions to build.
Yes, yes, but get to the important part.
I don't like the maquettes. They're all abstract, very avant-garde, a bit sophomoric. I seem to have told him that. I never could keep my mouth shut.
You're avoiding her. Let her in.
But there's this one statue. A small terracotta figure only about 6 inches tall, the only representative piece in the lot. It's a little goddess figure in the Cretan style, with bare breasts and a flared long skirt. Her head is held high, her chin pointed upward. Her arms are held slightly away from her body at each side, the hands flat, the palms facing front and open. I think she's beautiful. I want her for my own to keep. I steal her from the shelf and run away with her.
Who is she? What does she say?
I don't know who she is. How can I know who she is? Some goddess or other. But I do know. I do know what she says, even though she doesn't say it aloud. Isn't that odd?
Not at all. And if you know what she says without her having to speak, then you also know who she is the same way you know who I am, without my having to remain silent.
You mean she's us? We're all me too?
And she says?
She says, oh, it's too beautiful. I can't. I don't deserve.
Yes. Yes, you can. Try. Let us all speak. Let us.
I am strong, but not brutal. I am gentle, but not weak. I am eternal and newly born. I am totally alive and dying each second. I am the weeping one who chooses to laugh. I am the silence and the song. I am the sufferer of beauty. I am beauty itself. I am what you call freedom that has no name. Something in me has always existed. Something in me will never cease to exist. I am my own holy power. I am what I am. Waking self has risen to her feet to stand with head up and arms at her sides, palms open while speaking this. Now, like someone coming out of a deep sleep, she looks around her, dazed, then rubs her eyes and yawns. Dream self rises, going to her, and takes her in her arms gently, rocking her as one would a child.
There, yes, that's what we mean. That's it. That's been it all along, isn't that so? And isn't it fine? Isn't it a mystery? A miracle?
Waking self yawns again and nestles closer to dream self as if to a mother, nodding sleepily.
You must be exhausted, poor child. Lie down and sleep for a while. It's time you had some rest and realism in your life.
Oh, but I should be thinking about the next chapter. You see, the next chapter really scares me. It's about sex.
Well, we'll work on it until you wake up. Not to worry.
And the one after that scares me even more. It's about marriage.
Shh. It'll all take care of itself. Trust me. I'll help you with both.
Oh, but I can't let you write my book for me. That wouldn't be...
For pity's sake, child, who do you think has written your books for you all along? Such a silly you are.
Oh, then it must be all right, I guess. I might be a butterfly for all I know, or a goddess statue, or a goddess, or a silvery minnow, a stalk of wheat, a sunflower, a tidal wave, or even Kenneth or my mother or Blake. So it's nice that you write my books for me. Somebody has to, since I'm really probably all these somethings else.
Hush now. You're talking in your wake. Everything will be fine.
But how will I start the next chapter? It's very scary about sex, remember? I haven't a clue.
Look, I'll even give you the opening sentences right now, if that will reassure you, and if you promise to go right to sleep afterward, okay?
Ah, all right, fine.
Well, let's see. How about everything is experienced as desire. Desire is a form of curiosity, and ongoing desire is a form of insatiable curiosity. How's that?
Nice. Little philosophical, but nice and audacious. Hadn't expected to start on quite such an oracular note, but still, it'll work out, like you say. Except I'll never remember it. Too sleepy.
I wouldn't worry if I were you, which I am. Shh. Now, no more mumbling.
Well, one last thing. May I please dream about freedom?
Yes. Yes, my love, yes. Shh. Now, hush. Yes, my own, you may dream about freedom. That's what we're all here for.
Dream self and waking self blur and merge into one self, which drifts in a slow sleepwalk through the two-way mirror. From the other side of the glass, a butterfly emerges in sleepy spirals, then settles on a windowsill in the amber light of late afternoon, folds its wings, and falls awake.
Watching all the fishing boats coming, lying back in the warm, soft sand, seeing you with the sun in your eyes. Looking round with the wind in my hair, easing down without a care, touching you under sweet summer skies. There's a place I can go to to each other, finding out who we really are, being happy, being here with you, feeling sure that the feeling will last, even when this dream is past, we will see our love come shining through, and if fate should decide
My make-believe.